Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning to you. 910 on KDXU. I'm Andy. It's Mayor Thursday. Mayor Randall is right there. Actually, she's not. She's a little under the weather today, but you know what? She sent a pretty good replacement. Cameron Cutler is, I believe, Public Works Director, correct, Cameron?
Public Works Director. You're making me blush.
So when she's on her phone texting around when people call and have questions, she's usually texting you, right? She's bothering you.
That happens, but I sit close to my phone on these days.
Well, today you don't have to. You can then put the phone away and just chat with us. So.
All right.
Good to see you, Cameron. Thanks again for coming in today. I think it's worth getting a little background again about you. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up? High school you went to?
I grew up here. Went to Dixie High School. Went Saint to West
George
Elementary.
Guy. Nice.
A lot of people don't know where that was, but yeah, I grew up here.
West is, isn't that the...
it's where the courthouse is today.
Yeah, where the courthouse is today, West Elementary. Dixie High guy, huh? Nice. Dare I ask how long ago, or do you want to keep that under wraps?
1994.
Class of 94. Very cool. Cameron, you got a wife and kids?
Wife and kids. Four kids.
Four, okay.
We've got our last child is still in high school. He's a senior, and so we're getting close to someday being empty nesters.
Empty nester. I've been an empty nester for almost 2 years now, and I got to tell you, it's pretty nice.
Sweet.
Although, keep this in mind, your wife does not appreciate you walking around the house in underwear or less.
I will keep that in mind.
My wife is like, you never know who's going to show up. What if one of the kids comes home? And I'm like, come on, man. They all live far away. We have the tracker on our phones. We know where they are. But anyway.
Yeah, I got to get the kids used to taking care of me when I'm too old to take care of myself, right?
I even tell her, I'm like, well, we'll lock the door, right? And she goes, oh, they all have keys. All right, dear. I'll keep that in mind. Anyway, all right, yeah. So Cameron has got, now your older kids, are they in the area or have they moved away?
They are. I've got one on a mission, but one's married, one's still in college, and one in high school.
Okay. Where's your missionary?
Michigan. Nice. She likes to call herself a missionary.
Missionary. I've never heard that one. I like that. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, my daughter she got off a mission in Chile, and she is now in studying abroad in Spain.
Oh, wow.
In a BYU program. So, yeah, she'll be home around Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving. Actually, you won't have Thanksgiving with her, but she'll be around then. But
That's cool.
Fun times. Cameron, of course, works for St. George City. How long have you been with the city now?
I've been with the city since 2007. My background is engineering. Mm-hmm. I worked for an engineering firm before going to the city. When I started with the city, I started doing drainage projects, storm drain projects.
Okay.
And then it changed into traffic engineering, and I was the traffic engineer for several years. And then when my predecessor, he retired around 2014, and I was a appointed public works director at that time. So about 10 years as public works director.
Let's go back to your traffic engineering background. Let's talk about this a little bit in that. How many times have you heard, and I know I hear it, so I know you have heard it, people go, that needs a light there. That is so busy. Does someone have to die before they'll put a light in there? I mean, I've heard it over and over again. And certainly there are intersections that get headlines and, you know, accidents and things happen. But what goes into deciding which intersection gets a light? What is the bottom line?
Great question. I only get this question maybe once or twice, you know, maybe a day.
A day. Well, it's good to answer it on the radio then. Maybe we can slow that down a little bit.
Mostly, so signals follow signal warrants, federal guidelines. And okay. That's to make them uniform throughout the nation. State of Utah, we coordinate and collaborate closely with them. In the city of St. George, we have around, I want to say, about 68 traffic signals that are owned and operated by City of St. George. And then there's another large portion that's UDOT along Sunset Boulevard, St. George Boulevard, Bluff Street, the state roads are, and all the I-15 signals, those are all owned and operated by UDOT.
If we're getting on the freeway, the lights that lead onto the freeway, those are all UDOT?
Yes.
Owned
and
operated?
Any questions that you might have on, hey, Bluff Street or St. George Boulevard, a lot of those are UDOTs. But we do step in and try and help out, just like UDOT would. We just have more of a presence here, and they don't have as many crew members. They have to go throughout all of Region 4, Southern Utah, and so they're spread kind of thin, and so we do step in and help out if a light's out or some bulb goes out, LED or whatever it might be. Yeah. Traffic signals, they follow traffic signal warrants. There's 9 of them, but we don't use number 9. That's for rail service.
Don't have any railroad here.
Yeah. So most of the time, they're based on meeting those warrants are usually traffic volumes. That's an 8-hour warrant, 4-hour warrant, and a peak hour warrant. And so if you have, say you have a school or something, and so they only get in and out, you know, twice a day,
yeah.
And it's only during those hours, you might meet a peak hour warrant, but it doesn't hit the 4-hour and the 8-hour warrant. And so a lot of times that school traffic, or it doesn't have to be a school, it can be anything else that's right. Just maybe one time during the day, they don't usually warrant a traffic signal. So we look at the traffic volumes, and then we also look at accident data. We look at other geometrics. Do we have issues with sight distance? Do we have issues with poor visibility? Do we have maybe it's something that draws a lot of traffic regularly, but not all day? There's a lot of engineering judgment that goes into traffic signals. So you have the criteria that you look at, but you do have engineering judgment to try and put those signals in if they're needed. We have River Road. Years ago, we put a traffic signal in where the side streets never would warrant the volumes. But as River Road continued to build out and we had more signals show up down the corridor, we were missing one in the middle that would help with queuing and platooning down the roadway for the cars. And so we ended up putting one in, knowing that it would help the overall corridor to try and keep the speeds together, keep the cars together, and provide that side street opportunities to get out. And so a lot of engineering judgment.
That's fascinating to me because, you know, we don't think about a lot of that stuff. The queue and the platooning, but we think about, okay, there was a wreck there. That's what most people, there was a wreck there, somebody was hurt, maybe a kid was hit on a bike or something like that. But you're saying there is some judgment involved. When you say engineering judgment, do they take into account that they got an email, you know, 4 emails from somebody that lived in that neighborhood that maybe, a kid got hit by a car? Is that part of what goes into the decision making?
Okay. Absolutely. And not just those emails. I mean, there is the crash experience where the history at that intersection, if we don't meet the volumes, but for some reason we keep getting accidents, keep getting crashes, and especially pedestrian injuries, we'll look and see if we can mitigate some of that with other measures. But we will take those emails, and that will turn our attention, our focus to that for a little bit, and we'll try and figure out, hey, what's going on? What happened in this specific accident? A lot of times it's user error. A lot of times it's not paying attention, and traffic signals don't necessarily correct that. Unfortunately, you might have an intersection that you get a lot of T-bones, a lot of vehicles running stop signs or whatever else. A traffic signal will help correct some of those T-bones and the head-ons and things like that that will create a lot of injury. But they do induce more accidents, like rear-end accidents. Rear-end accidents, you don't have as much injury and hopefully not as much damage to vehicles and things like that. But they still occur, and they still, so red lights or, I want to say just traffic signals in general, they don't necessarily reduce all accidents. They will change the type of accidents, into less injury prone accidents.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting. All right, let's talk a little bit about, I think there's some misinformation out there about, lights, cars sitting at lights, you know, what detects. There, for instance, every morning I come over here by the subway over there and turn onto the boulevard, and the light detects that I'm there and changes. Most of the time I'm in here at 5 a.m., so I don't need it to because I'm turning right anyway, but it still detects that I'm there and it will change the Bluff Street light and turn it red and turn mine green. Is there modern technology involved there, or is it magnets, or is it, I'll let you answer.
Yes. So I want to say 20 years ago or better, we used to do a lot of loops in the ground, just some induction loops.
Okay.
And so when a car drives over it, that would detect a vehicle.
Right.
Some problems with that. If you had a bicycle or something like that, you might not have enough metal in that vicinity to be able to detect that pedestrian.
Sure.
They went to video cameras. We started using that quite a bit, and those worked a lot better than the induction loops in certain situations. Those loops are very dependable, but if you go to change any striping in a growing community and have to add more lanes or adjust the lanes, all of a sudden you have to go tear up the road to be able to change those. The cameras, the video cameras, allowed us to change those lanes however often we needed to be able to detect traffic. But the problem with video is if you had a foggy day, now we don't get that a lot in St. George, but if you do have a foggy day, or what we mostly got in St. George, the sun, the glare of the sun, that would mess up the video detection and a car might not be seen. Or if you have a large vehicle and then a say a semi with a trailer or something like that, it will shade or block the view of that camera to another car, another small car next to it. And so it would often have issues with visual sight, just for that camera to be able to sense vehicles. Then our newer technology that we use mostly today is radar. Now, large vehicles can still shadow or shade those vehicles where they can't be seen. But for the most part, the technology has come along where the radar detection is much more accurate. We can still move things around. I know they're coming out with even better technology. There's fisheye and combined radar video detection. But for the most part, technology has been a lot better. When you're sitting at the light, back to the comment that you had made, unfortunately, it depends on the corridor. Totally depends on the corridor. Bluff Street, you've got signals that are coordinated together. And if you come up to a signal during that coordinated pattern and you think, hey, just give me a quick green, let me get out of here, there's no cars coming or anything like that. Well, if it's in that program, it won't give you the green. It detects you, but it has to go through that cycle because it's tied to all those other signals along the corridor so to be able to move that traffic along.
So you're sitting there saying, come on, change. It's not going to change because it has its own pattern, its own timing that it needs to take care of.
Years ago, we were going from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. approximately trying to hit the majority of traffic, but people would call in at 6 o'clock to tell us, hey, 6 o'clock this morning, it wouldn't change it's I'm having problems. And as traffic continued to get larger and larger, the volumes, we had to move that timing. And so today, now I need to explain that. Today, if you're 6:30 or 6 and it won't change for you, it's because we've moved that program because we have a lot more traffic on the road at those times. So it totally depends on the corridor. There have been times where we have a detection failure. And if we get some calls, people saying, hey, you know, this thing did not turn for me, I ended up having to wait and then take a gap and look both ways and ran a red light, we will go out and check that signal and see if our detection failed. So it's helpful to call in and email in and let us know.
Now, how does there was quite a lively discussion online about this accident that happened out on 3000 where a Tesla driver hit a pedestrian. And a lot of the discussion was, well, this is a Tesla. Why didn't it detect the guy was there? The guy had the crosswalk and he had the light and the Tesla didn't see him. How is technology for these newer cars, Teslas and others that have a whole lot of detection on stripes and things like that, how has that changed the way traffic works for city engineers?
Well, it's kind of twofold and a double-edged sword a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have a vehicle that will sense a vehicle stopped in front of me, 100 feet or whatever else, and lights will start flashing and telling me, hey.
Collision imminent.
You got to stop. However, if I start relying on that, my attention might start to slip, and I'm not paying as much attention out there. And so it's a great technology, great help, but we do need to pay attention. This specific accident, I don't know the details yet. I intend to maybe try and get the traffic accident report, see what happens, see if there's something that we might be able to do to change something. From what I understand, again, this is without looking at the report, it happened fairly early in the morning.
Right.
I was even curious at what time the sun came up because it was a Saturday before daylight savings, and so it was actually darker that morning. And so the time of day, I think, might have been an issue that I don't want to say helped with that situation, but you know what I mean.
Contributed.
And so I know that it was earlier in the morning. There wasn't a lot of traffic out. I don't know if it was attention, not paying attention to the driving, color of clothing, Not 100% sure. It's always an unfortunate situation if a pedestrian's involved.
Do you know, with these newer cars, that especially the self-driving ones, they have the sensors that I think they sense the lines, right? They're going.
Do.
So is that incumbent then upon the city to say, okay, we need a line to be painted all the way through that intersection to help them turn? Is that become a part of things now?
We do use those little stripes through the intersections. Yeah. There's different terminologies, skip marks, elephant tracks,
mm-hmm.
Those little assistant lines going through intersections. We do use those. If we put them on every turning movement, the intersection, it might get a little bit haphazard and a little bit confusing.
Confusing, I think, maybe.
And so on major turns, we try to. What I don't know for sure is if you are turning, if that technology senses those skip lines, or if they need to be solid lines or not. So I don't really have an answer on that. But yes, we do utilize those little skip lines.
I was going to ask you about maybe some spots in the city that you think are maybe there's going to be some changes a little bit. And then we'll I know you don't really want to talk about too much. We'll talk about repaving over there on Riverside. But are there some spots in the city, like you said, you get asked every day. I see all the time people saying, hey, they need a light here and we need to fix. Are there some areas that maybe need addressing that you're working on?
We are working on a big project that we're working on is the 1450 South or George Washington Boulevard extension. Mm-hmm. We've been working on it for a couple of years now, and we are trying to get the permit so that we can start the bridge over the Virgin River. That's near the Dixie Center, near Crosby Way. That will have some major changes to that area. When you think about coming from the south area, Little Valley, Washington Fields, coming right. up River Road or on 1450 South, George Washington Boulevard, and needing to try and get to the freeway or over to Bluff Street or just over to the west part of town,
mm-hmm.
That you'll have two options. Today you only have Riverside Drive. You have to cross the river at on the Virgin River at River Road. Near Popeyes, near River Crossing there, and then hang a left. Well, we've got a dual left onto Riverside Drive. That was a project
by the post office.
Yeah, a few years ago. And Riverside Drive is pretty heavily driven. Unfortunately, that's I know we'll get into that just a little bit and can talk about that, but that roadway has been struggling drastically. But once we get that bridge in, once we get the 1450 South George Washington Boulevard extended, that will give a couple of options. So that if we did have an accident, if we did have road construction, we have another option.
Yeah,
and
we need it. Yeah.
That's a difficult area right there. The benefit is when we have Dixie Drive interchange, exit 5, this roadway, 1450 South George Washington Boulevard, will connect that and provide that connection to I-15. That's huge. That's a big deal.
As a public works guy, you get told sometimes about stuff like Exit 5 eventually coming in. I know over in Washington City, you know, they basically, UDOT came in and said, we're going to put an exit between 10 and 13. And it wasn't, what do you guys think about this, really? It was UDOT saying, this is going to happen, deal with it. And then they were able to submit some proposals on how it happened, how it was going to happen and stuff. Does that change your job often when the state comes in and says, we're going to do this, you know, get ready for it?
It can, and I want to give some qualifiers to that. They collaborate, UDOT, when I say they, UDOT collaborates pretty closely with cities most of the time.
Right.
Maybe it was different 30 years ago, before my time, but today I know that we have meetings. We usually see the writing on the wall. We usually see it coming. We usually have some discussions. I-15, for example, had an environmental document that was done, prepared, completed years ago. It was within the last 10 years or so. It identified certain elements that were going to be coming in the next 30 years or so that would be improvements, interchanges, widening. So
we've known, theoretically known about some of these for a while.
Yeah, we've known it's been coming. There's a few projects in City of St. George that we've done portions of them with UDOT that some of the intersection was improved, but because of some comments, support or not support of certain elements of the intersection, UDOT has pulled back and said, okay, we will wait for that. We won't put that in yet. Hmm. But when it does need it, we will have to put it in. St. George Boulevard, Bluff Street's one of them. 700 South interchange at I-15 is one of them. They've said, hey, look, we won't fund it for now. We don't have funding. It might be 20 years out before we have to do something like this. UDOT has been very willing to step back and say, okay, we need certain elements, but we don't have to have all the elements. But there are other things where we just know they have to happen. I-15 widening from exit 6 to 8, that's Bluff Street to St. George Boulevard, we know that it has to happen.
Yeah.
And with those are going to be certain elements that we like the widening, we like the capacity, but we don't necessarily like other elements along the side of I-15. Some things you have to do, some things you don't necessarily have to do yet, but they're really good to work with for the most part.
The Northern Corridor, I guess, is a big agenda item for you looking at it. Right now it's on hold. And some of the proposals, you know, one I really don't like, and I know the city leaders don't love the idea of making Boulevard a one-way street and, you know, coming into town, and then I guess, what is it, it's a Tabernacle, or is it
100
one-way going the other direction, which really, it just seems like a bad idea. But do you have any thoughts on alternate plans, or is Northern Corridor really what we need more than anything?
Well, the Northern Corridor, just to give you a little background, Northern Corridor idea and the concept has been around a long time.
Yeah.
It was in conjunction with SR7, Western Corridor. It was in conjunction with even the early stages of Red Hills Parkway to try and move traffic around. It's this idea of a belt route.
Yeah.
To try and
which
let
they have all over big cities everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. As some of the smaller cities outside of St. George start to grow, cities up Bluff Street, U-18, out a little bit to the west, Santa Clara, Ivins, Hurricane, Washington to the south, how to get traffic moving around the area without having to go down through these, just the downtown area, and that's it.
Yeah.
This belt route idea has been around a long time. Even when Red Cliffs Desert Reserve, when that was created and approved, in those considerations, the belt route was part of our master plan. It was not new. There were verbiages, paragraphs put into that the National Conservation, the Red Cliffs Desert Reserve, that allowed for utilities and roadways to be put in. One of those was the Northern Corridor. As time went on, new people came in. They didn't know this. They weren't aware of it, or they didn't remember very well that, hey, this corridor is one that still needs to come in. So when you're saying, hey, what other ideas are there? Well, there's the idea that you could just widen certain streets, but you're going to impact a lot of existing businesses, homes.
Right.
There's the idea where, okay, do we slow down development? How does St. George go and try and control other cities? You can't do that.
No.
So the belt route was one of them that it was coming out as a big hurdle. And Zone 6 was one of those negotiation points that, look, if we can try and get this Northern Corridor that's been in the plan, look, we can do other things to try and add to the Red Cliffs Desert Reserve and add to the reserve and the protection of the tortoise and other trails and other features. And so that's when the state stepped in, CITLA, and said, okay, then if you want to do that, we can come to the table and help out. And that's where Zone 6 was identified. The problem with, and a lot of people don't understand, when I've been in environmental meetings, the Expo, Transportation Expo, a lot of people don't understand that, hey, the state of Utah trust lands, this was a negotiating point. If the Northern Corridor doesn't occur where it went through that process, the environmental process, and the right-of-way identified, if that doesn't occur, that property within Zone 6 that's the state's property, they don't have to keep that reserved. They can start developing it.
Sell it and develop it.
And when you talk about state and their authority versus the city has less say in what the state can do with their property. In other words, it doesn't mean the city can just go and stop it because of zoning laws or anything like that.
Right.
So Zone 6 is part of that. That's why it's tied to the hip of the Northern Corridor.
Do you have an update, or is there any update right now? Are we just still on hold, or where are we at?
We are, the BLM has been going through a supplemental EIS. That means they had an EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, a couple years ago that was completed. There were a couple of things that came up that they wanted to look at, some vegetation, some fire hazard issues, some tortoise vegetation that they used to eat and sustain, and they wanted to relook at a few things in the environmental impact statement. So they did a supplemental environmental impact statement, another acronym, but an SEIS. And in that SEIS, they've been analyzing a few of those aspects.
By the way, SEIS sounds like C's, which is not a good thing. Anyway, keep going.
That's true, unless if it sees candy.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. My wife loves that.
Good point.
So they are just working on getting through the supplemental environmental impact statement, and we are expecting some information from that soon.
We're just kind of waiting. Yep. All right. Lonnie, actually on the phone, wants to ask about the Northern Corridor a little bit. Lonnie, what's up?
Well, one of my big concerns is, so we're going to have this Northern Corridor probably, the precedent that it's setting, because then, of course, they're going to want to have a Western Corridor, which is going to involve the Mose Valley, the Bear Paw, Poppy Trail, that bike ride, which is already trying to be developed, and it takes away from the original life. And I realize St. George is growing huge, but why do we give up those things that have made this area so valuable? And if you set that precedence for the Northern Corridor, then you set a precedence for the Western. And pretty soon, where's all the land, especially the things that drew us to St. George? And maybe even the pioneers way back in the day, not that they wanted to ride their dirt bikes or their mountain bikes. But those are some concerns. I really hate to lose Mose Valley and that bike ride over there. We have bike trails, but they're different.
All right, thank you. Yeah, thanks, Lonnie. Let's hear what Cameron has to say.
Yeah,
Cameron?
Great comments, Lonnie. Thank you. Let me mention first the Northern Corridor and then the Western Corridor. So the Northern Corridor, the Red Cliffs Desert Reserve, if the Northern Corridor does end up going in, it would not take away the rest of that property around the Northern Corridor in the Red Cliffs Desert Reserve. You're still going to have a lot of those limitations there. It would just be a roadway. And so back when, before the Red Cliffs Desert Reserve came in, they were looking at like a golf course up on that property. And so the city did get involved in those negotiations with the county to say, okay, we will reserve that. We won't build up in that area. Now, the Northern Corridor, yes, it would go through that to convey traffic, but those limitations would still be there. Yes, you're right. It does cut through, or the concept does cut through some of that area. But with that Northern Corridor, that was the extent of our transportation plans in that area. The Western Corridor, through this negotiation with Zone 6 and the Northern Corridor, we set an alignment for the Western Corridor that stayed out of Mose Valley, out of the trailheads and the Bear Claw Poppy Trailhead, to keep that away from that. And so actually the Western Corridor goes out and around that so that we could keep that Zone 6 area just for that, the recreation, the tortoise, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, like she said, we don't want to lose that and stuff. So
wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back, 9:43. I know it's getting late. I was mesmerized by all your talk about the Northern Corridor, Cameron.
Oh, no.
That was good stuff. And Tom has been super patient on the phone line. Tom, I know you had some questions for Cameron. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Good morning, Cameron.
Good morning.
I talked to the mayor about a month ago on Pioneer Road, a Man of War, and she said that there's been a stoplight approved there, but she had no time or date when that was going to be installed.
Sure, I can address that. She called me and said, hey, Cameron, when's that stoplight going in? I'm going, well, it will likely go in eventually, but we've been counting it several times over the many years, trying to figure out, hey, how much traffic do we have? Are we hitting the need for a traffic signal yet? So it hasn't met the warrants yet. She was referring to every year I give a budget recommendation and talk about the traffic signals. It's in that list that we are looking for. And Mayor she called me up and said, oh, man, I said this on the internet or on the radio. I said, hey, you're not wrong. You just didn't give a year. when that signal will be going in. But it will eventually come, Tom. It's just not meeting those warrants yet. I had an individual send an email to the city, and they eventually get to me when they're traffic-related. And the comment was, hey, when I pull up to this traffic or this intersection, I go to turn left. If there is a school bus coming south and turning right, I can't see past the school bus.
Or a truck.
Yes.
Any truck. Not even school bus. Any truck, you cannot see the traffic that's heading south.
Yes.
And then you have the cars that are in the right-hand lane that decide they need to get in the left lane to go to Sun River.
Yep.
And so they go across when they shouldn't be going across. They go across, and then cars get T-boned that way too.
So I started looking at that, and I realized, you know, it's probably a frustration for drivers right there, but it's actually no different. If I were to come off the come toward the boulevard from, say, like 100 West or 100 East, not at a traffic signal. There's two lanes on St. George Boulevard. If I have a large truck or a bus or something like that, a large vehicle turning right from the boulevard and turning onto my roadway, and I'm wanting to turn left, that blocks my view.
Can't see.
It's no different than a lot of intersections in City of St. George. And so my best recommendation is, you know, that I wish I could just snap my fingers and make that bus transparent for you for just a moment to make sure there's no cars behind it. But really, there's a lot of situations, and any time you're turning left out of an intersection like that and a vehicle is blocking your view, you just need to wait. Even though it might take even another 30 seconds or another 60 seconds, it's a lot safer to wait until you can see before you try and pull out. And so it's very similar to many other intersections that I can't really change that.
I know there's T-bones there, you know, quite often. And even more so probably now that Smith's is in, you're probably going to have more traffic going on Pioneer Road.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For people going to Smith's. And once all those restaurants are up there too, and the Tire Center, other projects going on up there, we're going to have a lot more traffic on Pioneer Road.
That's a good point. So we've counted at each time, say, not just Smith's, but when the hotels, when Terrible Herps, when other business has gone in down at Sun River, we have counted it again to see, okay, where are we to? With Smith's, we will end up counting it again, absolutely 100%. And maybe, I don't know how long it's going to take for traffic to normalize and get used to that, but within the next couple months or so, we'll take a look at it again and say, okay, has the traffic changed? Do we have a lot more traffic? Is it getting even harder to get out? What's the delay on that side street on Man of War? It's going to be getting closer. Every time a new vehicle gets on that roadway on Pioneer to go straight, and the delay starts to increase, it gets closer to meeting those traffic warrants. And so a signal will be coming. I just don't have a date because I try and meet those traffic warrants. We've looked at accident data, and they've kind of ebbed and flowed, but they've never met that accident requirement, that warrant.
So when you say counting, do you like those little strips across the road that count the when you go across them, is that how you count?
That's how we used to count it. Now we use a video and radar detection so that we can record it, and it's usually pretty inconspicuous. It's a little box out there that we might put on a pole. It's a trailer that we might use, and we count that we get the data, get the video, get the radar detection data, and then we bring it into the office, and so we have that data, and we can count it at that point.
Now, a couple of things I wanted to bring up, kind of related to what you were talking about with hidden vehicles. Lately in the news, there have been a couple of what they call courtesy trap accidents where, you know, traffic starts to back up. You maybe in the right lane say, hey, this guy wants to cross. I'm going to be the nice guy and stop and let him go. Only because it's a four-lane road, the other, or five-lane road, they can't see the other lane. So they see you letting him in. They go. The other car's coming, hits them. That's the kind of thing I think that nobody wants to hear. I mean, you like to be a nice guy, but I've always been contended that, you know, being nice is kind, right? If you're in, say, you're at Tuacon and there's a bunch of traffic and you want to let people in occasionally, that's fine. But there are certain occasions where being nice is not the right answer. Following the law is the right answer. Am I off base on that?
No, you're correct. In fact, I'm gonna be real in trouble by mentioning this. So my mom got a citation the other day.
Okay, you are in trouble, yes.
And because she got a citation, she needed to go through the traffic school online. And so I've been watching it with her.
That's nice of you.
And so just recently, a lot of these things come up just in the traffic school. So I will hit on what you're saying and also what the law says. You're not supposed to let people through like that. That can say you're at somewhere where a pedestrian wants to cross, and you stop and let that just
in the
like
middle
in a
of
parking
the,
lot.
Yeah,
say
yeah.
It's in a parking lot. You never know what's going to happen behind you if a car gets if a vehicle or a driver gets a little impatient and tries to go around you. You need to be very careful. So be courteous, 100% be courteous, but recognize that sometimes our courtesies go beyond safety, and you may end up. Not causing directly, but indirectly by letting them through when cars are not supposed to, they're supposed to yield to go through traffic. And so if those lanes are not, what do I want to say, no vehicles in those, a large gap there where they can go through, I have seen personally accidents. I've seen accidents where that has occurred, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there. We've had, that's one of the big things with multi-lane crosswalks.
Yeah.
You stop at a crosswalk. Per law, you're supposed to stop, and a pedestrian starts walking, and that other lane can't see the pedestrians because the vehicles block the view of the pedestrians.
All they can see is there's a guy stopped in the middle of the road. Why is he stopped there? Well, I'm going to go around him.
Yeah. So be courteous, be kind, but please be aware. I hate to say it, but you shouldn't be letting people in like that. There's several locations around town where that happens, but I know you feel really sad and you probably feel like a schmuck if you don't let somebody in and they want to get through. But if you let them in and they get hit, that's much worse than just having to wait another 30 seconds.
My drive home every day is on Red Hills Parkway going down the hill. And, you know, the traffic backs up from 1000 East up the hill. And every day I see people, you know, hey, I'm going to let this guy in. And like you say, you got a multi-lane road. You got the guy in the right lane going, yeah, I'm going to let this guy in, especially if they're trying to get left off of, you know, coming up the hill from the boulevard. And I'm like, this is not good. There's going to be a crash. You know, just follow the rule. I mean, yeah, it's frustrating a little bit to me, and I'm sure it is to you. One more quick commercial break in, and then we come back. We're going to talk a little bit, just for a minute, about the roundabouts at the Bloomington exit, and there might be changes afoot, maybe.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy with Cameron Keller, Public Works Director for the City of St. George, is with me on the show. We actually are down to the final 6 or 7 minutes. And Cameron, thanks, first of all, for coming in and giving me your time. Mayor was going to be with you today, but she is a little under the weather. So we got Cameron solo today, and you've done great.
Unfortunately for all the listeners out there, I'm sorry.
No, you've done a fantastic job. All right, I teased it, the Bloomington exit. You're talking about one or two times a day people mention, you know, ask you about, you know, there needs to be a light in here, a light in there. But maybe even more often than that, the Bloomington roundabout situation. Is there going to be a change? And if there is, how far away are we from that particular area?
There will be a change, and I don't have a specific date.
Okay.
It could be within 5, 10, 15 years. My guess is less than 10.
Okay.
But we will see. That interchange right there, that's the Bloomington Interchange Exit 4. Those roundabouts have served the community quite well.
Yeah.
They run a lot of traffic through there. The plan that is in the environmental document that was approved and accepted years ago for I-15 was to move that to a SPUI. It's another
SPUI. Better explain what that is. Yep.
now I'm going to forget. A single point urban interchange, SPUI, and it's very similar to Exit 10 in Washington. Very similar to Exit 2 down at Sun River, where everything comes to one signal, like Exit 5. And one signal controls all of the through movements and the turning movements on and off the ramps. So it's just a single point, basically, SPUI.
Okay.
That's in UDOT's plans, unless they change those plans, which I'm not aware of, but that's in UDOT's plans to have Exit 2, or Exit 4, sorry, Bloomington, change to a SPUI.
Do you think that'll make things better or worse traffic-wise?
It will change things, and it will make things
<Good answer. laughs>
better for certain elements. I'm not trying to be political, but see, it will help certain things and not help certain things.
Okay, kind of like you were talking about with the way the accidents change. It might change less injuries, you know, if you put a light in there, but it might create more accidents,
yeah.
rear enders or things.
The big thing that will change, UDOT will be able to control the signals so that they can control vehicles not queuing onto I-15. Mainline is what they call it. Those high speeds, that's very, very dangerous.
Yeah, you don't 80 miles an hour and somebody hits somebody yep. from behind. That's deadly.
There have been times where that queue length on southbound ramp, they have queued up and got very close to mainline. And
wow.
you can't control the round. You can't control the timing or anything like that on there. And so, yeah.
Okay. Real quick, a text. I asked Mayor about 3000 East southbound making the right lane turn west on Segmiller Drive. I assume she asked Cameron, and the answer was given that it's because the east side of the road isn't developed yet. My problem with that answer is that the west side of the road, southbound, is developed and wide enough for two southbound lanes to be striped. So why not stripe it?
Okay, Segmiller Drive. We are getting there. We have some development going on the south. There's one segment of area that is not fully widened, and it's just south of Segmiller Drive. We are in the works of working with a developer that's developing some of that property right there to try and improve all the rest of that road. Once that occurs, then, yeah, we can move that five-lane section, the two lanes in both directions, move that south a little bit more.
Okay.
But there's also a lot less traffic. After it goes south of 2450 South, there's a lot less traffic. You don't necessarily need five lanes. Five lanes can help with traffic going down on the when you're going north and south, but it also induces a lot more speeding. And when you're turning left out of intersections, now, just like what we were talking about before, one vehicle might be blocking the side of another vehicle. Mm-hmm. It becomes a little bit more difficult to turn left out of. And so we need to finish up the road, and then based on the traffic volumes, we will be moving that five-lane section more to the south, but we want to be careful that we don't necessarily create a different situation.
So, real quick, we're out of time. We got a minute left. Updates, Northern Corridor. We are waiting for a second, what is it, second?
The supplemental EIS.
Supplemental, that's it, yeah. Supplemental environmental study. The Bloomington Roundabout, which will eventually become a lights, that's down the road maybe 5 to 10 years at least.
Yeah.
Okay. And it seemed like there was one more I was going to ask about, but it's actually flown away from my brain right now.
We've had a lot of road construction out there, so please be patient with us.
Yeah. I know Cameron was extra sensitive about Riverside Drive during the election, having resurfacing.
Sorry.
The timing was a little bit bad, but it was not intentional, right?
Correct.
Okay, Cameron, thanks for coming on today. Really, really appreciate you spending time with us and answering a bunch of questions. And, you know, Cameron is a public works director, which means traffic isn't necessarily his main job, but it's certainly a big part of your job.
So. Correct.
Thank you, Cameron.
Thanks.
Good to talk to you on this this Thursday. We've got Open Line Friday here on the Andy Griffin Show tomorrow. We'll certainly talk about the elections and some of the cool stuff that happened on Election Tuesday and more. And Mello will be with me, too, tomorrow. We'll look forward to talking to you then.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.